Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up? This is DeJuan Boyd, a.k.a. DJ Rabbit, representing Rabbit Productions, hanging out chilling with my girl, Cy Boogie. That's right, Cy Brown, right here on LifeRemixedRadio.com. Say word.
Hey, everybody. Today is Tuesday, October 21st, and it's your girl, Cy Brown, just hanging out with you right here on Life Remixed Radio, bringing you your daily dose of urban inspiration, inspiration, motivation, tips and solutions and offerings so we can live the absolute best life we can while we are here on Earth. You know, so many things that we see around us, so much stuff is happening. At least I know for me, it becomes a little challenging sometimes to make it through each day. So I think it's great that I have the opportunity to come before you and just share the stuff that I know, which is not that much. I always say I'm just not that smart. Smart, but not that smart. But share with you all the tips and tools and ways and mechanisms that I have in my power and the ones that I find online and with the people that I meet so that we can rethink everything we know to live as successfully as possible. I don't think, you know, the word success is definite. I think it's something that evolves. I don't think it's something that you can say, okay, I want success, because really, I don't believe that there's a solid place for success. I don't think success is an absolute destination that once you get there, you arrive. And I say that based on the fact that when I was younger, I always said I wanted to be successful, and I set particular benchmarks. And then as I started hitting those benchmarks, I'm saying, well, wait a minute. There's got to be more to this. There absolutely has to be a little bit more than what I have right now, not necessarily materialistically, but just in a sense of, okay, there's got to be more than this. And basically it was my spirit saying, you're not satisfied. And definitely, you know, material possessions and prospering physically with physical possessions is a good thing. But there's so much more, I believe, to living successfully. So today I just want to talk a little bit about success, what success means to you, what success means to the average person, what success means based on our current economy, what does success mean based on young people's perception of success. I know my two teenagers, oof, I can't believe in a very short time I won't even have teenagers anymore. He'll be in his 20s, but for right now I've got two teenagers. I'll share with you what they think is success, and especially my 19-year-old. I mean, what he thinks is success is mind-blowing sometimes. But then even when you look at younger people, such as my 14-year-old, he thinks success is getting this new jacket and sneakers that he wants. So I guess it's all relative. Well, it's always going to be relative. But I think today I really want to take an in-depth look at what is success and how to live as successfully as possible based on our own parameters and based upon what we define as success and how we get there. So on that note, oh, I just got hit up in the chat room. Hey, family, calling into the show. Hey, True, are you calling into the show for me to pick up, or are you calling into the show to listen? Let me know so I know whether I should pick up the line or not. So, let me know. Oh, volume issues and I need to multitask. Okay, cool. At least so I know if I see your number come up on the monitor, I won't pick it up. So thank you for hanging out with me today. I also see we have another guest in the chat room. Thank you, guests, for joining me today. It's a pleasure, absolutely my pleasure, to be able to just kind of talk and do what I do and have you join us. We have a great family right here at Life Remixed Radio. We kind of laugh and kick in and smile every single day. So thank you for joining us. True, I see you just came up on the board. Hey, Tiff. Tiffany just joined us. Tiff, today we're talking about success and how to live as successfully as possible, and what is the definition of your success, and how do you achieve your level of success based on your understanding of success. So it's almost kind of like a tongue twister, but it really, I think, is going to force us to rethink life. And basically, that's the purpose of the show, for us to rethink everything we know so we can live as successfully as possible. And, you know, I got this partly because, and I'll get into this in a moment, I'm going to get into our daily thought and all that stuff, but I had a conversation with my production assistant. She was at my house, not this past Saturday, but the Saturday before, and we got into a very spirited debate, I should say, about success. And, you know, I'm going to get into that on the other side of me reading the Daily Thought if I can find it on my desk. You know, usually I have all this stuff right in front of me and prepare, but I was blogging all morning, so I don't even think I have the Daily Thought in front of me. I think I do. Let me just check underneath my pile of stuff. But if not, I'll post it up on the blog because I don't see it right in front of me, and I don't want to waste time looking for it. That's what I get for having all of the newspapers. I read so many newspapers. I actually read newspapers every day. And then, I read the ones online and this and that. So, unfortunately, my desk gets very cluttered. I try to clean it at the end of every night, but it doesn't always work that way. Hey, Yishu, thanks for joining us today. I see you just popped into the chat room, so it's good to have you. I want to get into, let me just give you a quick programming note. Tomorrow I have a wonderful guest who is going to be joining me, and we're talking about aging parents. We are going to talk about how to deal with generations of, you know, previous generations, them aging. And I met her last week in the city, and we were talking, and many of you know that I lived with my grandmother up until this July, and she's 87 years old. And it's difficult dealing with old people. And now my dad's dealing with her. And she's not frail or anything like that, but she's just aging, you know, and the needs of aging people. Can you please open this jar of spaghetti sauce? Little things like that. So, you know, do you get a caregiver? How do you pay for a caregiver? When do you decide that you need a caregiver? So all of these things we're going to talk about tomorrow. So I am very, very, very excited about that show. But going back to today's show, I just want to get into a little bit of the premise of today's show. Hey, Mama Smokey, let me see what's going on in the chat room very quickly before I get into it. Hey, True, I saw your post yesterday on Help a Reporter Out, so if you need any help getting a guest for your show, let me know. That's about it. Everybody, wow, Yeshua saying someone's father lived to be 106 years old. Yeah, that's, well, whoever supported that dad will really enjoy tomorrow's show because we really are going to talk about just the whole aging issue. How do we deal with all these ages? I mean, just think about it from my perspective. I'm dealing with my grandmother who's 87, my dad who's 57, I'm 37, and my teenage sons. You know, how many generations is that? And what is the mental toll that takes on you? So I just know, I'm just excited, and I know tomorrow's show is going to be a really good show. So I'm excited about that. You said it was your grandmother. Wow. That's beautiful. But I want to get into today's show, which is about successful living. I was sharing at the top of the show that my production assistant, her name is Malikia, and she is really a sweetheart. She works tirelessly with me. She came over last Saturday for dinner, and she said to me, we were talking how I said I'm never satisfied, and I know, Tiff, you can relate to that, and I don't think I'm that successful. God, is this so personal that I share with you guys everything, but that I don't believe that I'm that successful. And she said, Saida, come on now, are you really serious? And I think she thought I was joking, and I said, no, I'm really serious. I don't see myself as that, and I keep prefacing it with that being in quotation marks, like that successful. And she said, why? And I'm like, well, you know, I'm normal. You know, I'm just a normal person. And she said, Sai, how can you go out and talk to all the people that you do, not even the radio show, not even you guys, but just when I go out and lecture, and encourage young girls in particular, and you yourself don't even think you're successful. Well, you know, I got very offended. And I said, well, it's easy because that's my job. And she says, well, how do you know what to talk about? And I said, and I, there were little facetious jabs being exchanged, but she really wasn't coming from a condescending position. She was really coming from a position where she wanted to know, because don't forget, she travels with me. So she sees the crowds of people and me shaking and doing book signings and stuff like that. And I said, Nick, do you really think I'm that successful? Give me a break. Like, we are still running to the grocery store looking for coupons, using coupons and, you know, making sure we have money for gas. And she's like, sigh, but none of that really matters. And I'm like, well, I just can't picture. To me, that is not what I envision as success. So here's where the bombshell comes in. So that was the setup, everybody. She said, well, you really need to look deep inside and figure out what you want because you're confused. Now, with all due respect to Malikia, like, she reports to me. So here is somebody who's like my subordinate telling me you need to check yourself. But this is why I love her, and this is exactly why we go everywhere together, and she works with me, and we have a great relationship. And but at the time, you know, it's Saturday night, probably like 9:30, 10 o'clock. I had already had a glass of wine. I'm pissed. And in my mind, I don't even want to talk to her ever again. So that's how, you know, I guess not ignorant, but how offended I was. And the conversation continued. I was extremely tense, and she saw my whole face tense up. And she was saying, Sai, you really need to explore what success is, because then you'll figure out how to be happy, because I have a very hard time rationalizing how you go out and encourage and talk to people and you're so miserable. So, Tiff, I'm sure you can appreciate where I'm going with this conversation. But if you really, really look at it, I think we all have to understand what success means to us. And one of the things that I have come to realize is what I thought were self-imposed standards was really unrealistic expectations of myself. Yeah, Tip, I'm reading in the chat room right now. This is Bull, Taurus to the soul. Yeah, I'm a Taurus all the way through to the end. And sometimes being a Taurus is really not good, because we are some stubborn little sons of guns, boy. We get something locked in and we don't let it go. So I'm definitely like that. I try not to be like that. But anyway, I had to look very, very deep in myself, and I wouldn't let her know it. Here's the stubborn part, everybody. Here's where I really got stubborn. She left my house, and she refused to leave with us having obvious tension. So she didn't leave my house till after midnight. Now, mind you, this conversation started at like 9:00. And so the next day, I was still very angry, didn't want to talk to her, didn't want to be her friend, because how dare you tell me I need to take an introspective look at myself. Screw you. Well, I refused to do it because I felt she was wrong. I felt that she didn't understand the standards that I set for myself, da-da-da-da, whatever it is. Well, a week later, which was this past weekend, it finally sunk in, because I realized that, and it's not just me, I talked to a couple other people, that quite often we operate according to what we see in this physical world to set our expectations for ourselves, which is so amazingly unrealistic that we're really hindering our own opportunity to live as successfully as we personally can. Now, don't ask me to repeat what I just said, because I probably couldn't, but I get the gist of what I just said. The point is this. I never considered myself influenced by media images or the things that I saw on TV. I'm like, man, I know that's fake. But subconsciously, I really was allowing myself to be pressured by all of these images that were beaten down every day. So now, if I'm watching Kimora, Life in the Fab Lane, and she has a driver and a Land Rover, a Range Rover, whatever it is, and she has a gold-plated desk, subconsciously, I'm saying I want the same thing. And because I don't equate my own level of success as being successful because look what I'm measuring it by. Is anything I'm saying making sense? Let me go check a look into the chat room. Yeah, okay, good. I'm happy everybody's kind of seeing what I'm talking about. Yeah, Truth says now you want to go kick people out of your house. Yeah, I was really upset that night. Miss Smokey says money, knowledge, material. Yeah, and that's what it is. But anyway, let me get back to the story because I want to open this up and I want to share with everybody what I did to help me get out of this rut that I did not even realize I was in. So anyway, this past weekend while I was writing, y'all know I'm trying to finish up two books now. I have Politics Remix that's in the editing process that will be out next Tuesday. And then I've got Life Remix that I'm working on that True is in, Drop His Seed, and Tiff are in. That book will be out later on in November or early December. But anyway, just in writing and being holed up in my house and not taking a bath for 2 days because I sat in the same chair just writing literally for like 2 days straight, I realized that I was allowing myself to be so influenced by outside stimuli that I never had an opportunity to take a really good look at who Saida is and what makes Saida tick. And that was a very harsh and painful reality for me, because I always considered myself too strong to succumb to the influences of my senses, which is your sight, the music that you hear, the things that you see. And so this is what I did, and this is how I got out of my rut. And I'm just doing today's show on how to live as successfully as possible, because this was something that I was suffering from and didn't even realize it, and this is how I got out. I took a piece of paper, and on a piece of paper, just like regular, you know, copy paper, I drew a circle. And inside the circle, I wrote my name. And inside of the circle, next to my name, I wrote everything that I have. So my car, my career, my books, the radio show, people that buy my books, my customers, people that listen to my radio show, my supporters, my family, anything that I could just imagine that I have that's tangible. I didn't even think intangibles like health and peace, so we're not even taking it that far. I'm talking about the tangible stuff. Okay. True, I see you. When you have a moment, you want to make a comment. Okay, cool. I'll pick up in a second. So inside the circle, I put everything that was tangible. Outside of the circle, I put the things that I want and the things that I think will make me happy and the things that I think will make me successful. Then I really sat and started to look at what I have versus what I want and realized that the things that I want are of no significant importance to true success and happiness in life. And I'll get back to that in a minute. Let me pick up Truth Call real quick. Hey, you there? Hold on one sec. Hey, what's going on?
What's going on, Miss Saida? Okay,
I'm so happy with you.
I know. I'm always talking in the chat room.
Yeah, right. Our fingers got tired of talking to each other today.
No, but this is a really good topic, you know, because what I wanted to say for me is success. I don't measure success by actually any of those methods that you're talking about, which is kind of strange because we're both from New York, and I know people in New York can be kind of flashy and things like that. But for me, what I try to do is influence others with my work that I do. Like, you know, I employ people. When I employ people, I enjoy watching them grow and what success that they get from working with me and what they learn. Like a great deal of my employees, I always bring them in young, whip them in shape, and kick them out. A great deal of them are self-employed now, and they still call me and ask me for questions. And, you know, being at church, being involved with the youngsters and, you know, administering to them in different ways to grow into successful individuals, depending on which way they want to go, to me that's success, which has nothing to do with monetary issues.
the toughest part for me is, and I think growing up in New York has a lot to do with this, and I'll tell you why. My production assistant, Malikia, is from Detroit, and she'll tell you she didn't grow up with much, you know, big, you know, just her mother, her stepfather, her younger brother, you know, they didn't grow up with a lot, but they had enough, and they focused on family and church and relationships. And I said, coming from New York, and this is a very true statement, whether it applies to other New Yorkers or not, I didn't even know people that went to church growing up in New York. And I had to explain to her that for people that are in New York, not even that live in New Jersey or Connecticut, specifically New York City, most people do not, that I know, do not go to church for one of two reasons. Number one, nobody's connected to a church like that. And number two, there's so many things to do on a Sunday morning. Church is only one option of many.
Right?
So you kind of dig what I'm saying. Now, this does not say people that live, I'm even going to narrow it down even further, because in the borough of Brooklyn, there's a million churches.
Yep.
But I'm talking about specifically people that grew up in New York City, the borough of Manhattan. And I hate to hone in with such precision, but that island of Manhattan is so different than the rest of the world.
That is true. You can hang out at like 15 clubs till like 8 o'clock in the morning, and for sure going to church may not be that, you know, important once you get in like about 9 o'clock that morning from hanging out that night.
My husband, who's a little bit older than me, he's in his early 40s, he tells me he remembers going to this club called The Garage, and you would come out and it's like 12 noon the next day.
Right.
Like it. And so I think for me, and just growing up specifically in New York City, not Queens or any of the outer boroughs, there is no room for error. I don't know of any place on the face of the planet where there's absolutely no room for error. Like in New York City, you slip up once, you're gone. Like there's
That's
a million
true.
Other people to replace you. So for her growing up in Detroit, obviously it's the pace is a lot more slow, but you know, there's family, and if this person falls short, this person can pick you up. I said it's not like that in New York, especially New York City. And I think growing up in New York City is just such a different animal. And I think that's why we moved to Atlanta a couple of years ago, because we realized it's very detrimental to raise young people in that environment. And I'm a product of what happened. Did you find any of that living, like any of those experiences living here, like that zero room for error thing?
Oh, definitely. That's why I left New York, actually, because I was beginning. I left New York when I was 21, so obviously I've been here going on 22 years. Yeah, 22. I'll be 42 shortly. So the reason why I left was because I was beginning to get caught up. It's very easy to get caught up in, you know, the fancy vehicles and hanging out Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday night, going into work, putting in a, you know, 4-day work week. So I knew that that wasn't the environment for me to be in. So when I came out to California, I saw opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, there was something else that I saw in California, at least this specific part of California where I am. I realized that even though there's a lot to do in California, the family environment is a little bit different. People are close but still separated, and I was missing that touchy-feely environment that California offers, and a lot of the South does as well. So that's when I decided to make that move and come over here, and that's why the changes come. I think I've grown more as a person by helping others and watching them grow, as opposed to if I was in New York, because the level of competition is high, it's fierce, it's drastic, and if you can't make the cut, they're kicking you out. And that's even in school.
Yeah.
You can feel it.
It's very true. I see the High Road made some comments. I knew lots of them when I was growing up in Queens. We used to travel to Harlem to go to church. But I want to say this with all due respect. Again, in Queens, going to Harlem to go to church, I'm talking about a very concentrated area. And because when you travel out to Queens, first of all, Queens has grass.
Right. You're right.
You feel what I'm saying? Queens has grass, it's got trees, it's got schools that may only have three floors. My high school on 18th Street and 8th Avenue was right across the street from Chelsea Projects, and it had eight floors, and the gym was on the eighth floor. So anybody that had gym first period always failed because nobody wants to walk up eight flights of steps at like 8 o'clock in the morning. And when I say that to people, they're like, you had eight floors? I said it was just a tall, narrow, skinny building.
Right.
So, I mean, just being groomed in that environment, I think it has had certain detrimental effects on me. And this is definitely not to slight my parents, because I've shared with you all on several occasions, I grew up very, very well. But psychologically, and that's the distinction, financially and materialistically, I was good. But it's the emotions that go behind growing up in this taxi cab rat race, no room for error, you can't screw up, look behind your back, that has me at the place in my late 30s where I am paranoid to make a mistake, because you're growing up in this place where you can't make a mistake. And unfortunately, I raised my children to a certain degree in that same way, not offering any room for error. And my son... What were you going
to
say?
You know, Si, I would agree with you, but then to disagree slightly. Slightly. Not a whole lot, just slightly. The one thing I do think about New York is that it definitely teaches you how to stay on your grind. And once you have gotten that bug and you know that you have to stay on your grind no matter where you go, you can tell a New Yorker, because they are going to be on their grind. They're not afraid to hustle. And they're going to turn something into nothing. I mean, you look at most of the celebrities now. I mean, like the real true moguls out there. New York, that's all I have to say. Granted, Atlanta's coming up, because you hear me always talk about Atlanta, but you got to take your hat off to New Yorkers. I mean, they just stay on their grind, and that's no matter where you go. We think global.
But it's tough, because I've had people that listen to the show every day, and you've been one of my listeners probably since the very beginning of my show. Some shows are flawless. You see the caliber of guests that I have on the show. Then other shows are disastrous. I can't log in. I'm crying. I can't. The chat room won't open. I'm frustrated. And my husband has seen all facets from the day I started this show on July 7th. And he says, Saidi, you get so frustrated if things don't go right. But that's that grinder, I guess, in me. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
I want it to be right every single time. And if it's not, I get angry. And it's not just to say, it goes back to my circle that I told you I had to draw on a piece of paper, to understand that that I'm inside this circle, and that everything that's outside of the circle is not necessarily meant for me. So be happy with what I have, work with what I have, and be okay. But on the flip side of that, that's why I'm able to do this show every day, because I do grind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what you were speaking of. You have that. Once you get that in you, it's really hard to let it go, be it good or bad.
Did you see what Tista said?
Comment on it.
No. Yeah, we just leave it at that. But it's funny.
Funny too, but you know what? I just want to give a comment to Tiff. And I'm not going to repeat it because the show is downloaded through iTunes, but I have to tell you one thing. My husband has always laughed and said, I would probably feel better if I did, but I don't. So ironically enough, I laugh about that to this day because I don't, and that's probably why I'm so high strung. So for all of those who are not catching what I'm saying, poo-poo on you because you missed the chat room today. Yeah, I have a lot of drama. But true, you're absolutely right. And you know what's really funny? When I moved to Atlanta, I had to kind of tell people that I lived in Ohio, because the minute I said New York, their whole attitude towards me would change.
Oh, yeah.
And my accent is very New York.
Mm-hmm.
I had to tell people, oh, no, I'm from Ohio, because the minute I moved down there and told people that I was from New York, my boss at the time called me a Yankee. She was like, you Yankees from up there, you so with your fast-talking self. This is my boss. I mean, it was horrible. And so everybody in Atlanta thought everybody from New York was going to come down, take your jobs, out-hustle you. And for the most part, we did. But it's that something that's inside of us that got us down there, allowed a lot of New Yorkers to move to Atlanta and do very well, move to Charlotte or move to other places and leave all the AT aliens looking around like, what just happened here? And I tell you, I know people that moved down there from Brooklyn, and they were on that rah-rah, I'm from Brooklyn, and I'm like, don't do it to yourself.
Yeah.
And they got run out of Atlanta. Because you can't, it's one thing to have a drive and a hustle, but you also can't alienate people either.
That is true. But, you know, I think, you know, going back to what you were saying originally, that is part of the inclusion is something that is important to me. Even in my community here where I live now is, I would say hands down, probably like 87% white and 13% minority. Get it? That's 13% minority. That includes, you know, Black, Asian, and everybody else in the mix of that. But the thing about that is the way I move through my community, you know, I'm respected in the community simply because of the fact that I am about motivating others. So when I go places, regardless of where I go, I get showed a lot of love because people can feel that I'm about, you know, motivating them and making sure that they're doing their best. In fact, I was just a coffee house this morning. We're not going to advertise names up in here, but I was at a coffee house this morning, and one of the young ones came to me and was talking to me. She said, hey, I need to know if you're looking for anybody. And I was like, well, I'm not looking for anybody at this moment. I said, well, why? What's up? And, you know, you asking me for a job, so I need to know what's up. She said, you know, I decided not to go to school, and my parents is making me pay for my car insurance. Now, mind you, we're talking about a brand-new car here, too, you know.
Wow.
So I said, well, let me ask you this. Do you think that it's right that your parents is forcing you to pay for your insurance? And she said, yeah, you know, the deal was I was supposed to go to school, and since I'm not going to school, yeah, I guess I need to pay, but, you know, my money is a little short. So now, mind you, so the thing about that is it sank in that responsibilities need to take place. But I'm happy that she was able to come and talk to me about it because you got to stay close when you're motivating. And that's staying close is can be a very difficult situation.
Yeah, it definitely – it's hard. It's really, really – it's not easy. It's not easy, but I do want to take the conversation back to our definition of success and successful living. I'm anxious to hear what you, and you have a radio show too, so I want you to tell everybody when your show is on, but what you feel is your definition of success, because I'm definitely going to share mine before the end of the show.
Okay, I'll make it brief. My definition of success is being able to see how others succeed. And my definition of success has nothing to do with the materialistic things because, you know, being from both sides of the coast now, New York and California, I know smoke and mirrors when you see it.
Baby.
you feel me on that one? So, you know, because you drive in a Land Rover or whatever the situation is, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're a baller. That just means that you have a high car payment. You know, and in California, the opposite side, just because you live in what may be valued a $1 million home does not necessarily mean that you roll in that way. That just means you have a high mortgage. So now, in speaking about rethinking everything that you know, what I have done is I've gone back and say, okay, now, what is it going to take to get there, and what's going to take for you to maintain balance? And one of the things that I've done is put my investment, as far as success go, in people. Because if you're good-natured and you know how to grind, you're going to survive. And let others give you the praise. See, that's where the success comes in, is how other people perceive you and what it is that they're defining your success as. Like, people go, wow, you know what, you're really successful, you have a business, you know, you're doing this and you're doing that. But at the end, they always say, you know, you helped so many people. I know that if I pick up a phone and call you, that I can rely on you being there. And to me, that's because they get the point of what it is I consider to be success, my investment in others.
You know, that never crossed my mind. And I say that in absolute love, because I think the show and my heart contradicts what just came out of my mouth. So I think I do it, but didn't know that I was actually going that route, if that makes any sense.
I do, like, understand.
Like, you get what I'm trying to say? Not that I be a detriment to anybody, but I think instinctively I do want everybody to live well. But I've never put a conscious thought behind it. And I want to speak very quickly to that car issue and that house issue and that smoke and mirrors issue. The same productionist at Malikia, who, when I first moved into my office space, I don't even want to get into how much office space costs in New York City on 39th Street and 8th Avenue. But when she came to the office, she sat in my office, and it was on a corner. And I looked out into Times Square, like the big New York Times building. And she said, wow, Si, you're really doing it. And I almost broke down and cried, because I'm like, yeah, there's security downstairs. Yeah, you could look out at the Times, right into Times Square from my window, but I have no money. Mm-hmm. I don't consider that successful. Does that make sense? Like, I'm saying to myself, from an outsider looking in, they're like, wow. And I'm like, whoa. You know, as fast as it's coming in, is as quickly as it's going out. So that, I don't measure success by that. But it definitely speaks to people's interpretation, people's perception, and that whole smoke and mirrors thing. And that frustrates me more than anything, because a lot of times I think we live according to perception versus what is true, what is real, and what is right, versus what we want to be true and what the core of truth really is. And I think that's how this world, particularly the United States, has gotten into the debacle that it is right now, because everybody's been blindsided and has lost focus and has kept their eye off the ball, and the powers that be were enabled to do what they want to do. And it's frustrating.
It is. I would definitely agree with you on that. And that's why it's very important to remain humble, because, you know, when I came to California, it's funny, I was getting a haircut. And this is a real quick story. And I was with an ex at that time, and I had so much swagger, because, you know, when you come from New York, you got swagger. And I was running my mouth and saying a whole bunch of things, and she had pulled me to the side. This is 21 years ago. Still remember the story. She said, you know, you seem like you're a really nice guy, but you need to learn how to be a little bit more humble. And that resonated with me even to this day, sometimes when I'm getting a little bit out of reach for myself. And that's why I try to make sure I maintain in context, you know, because it is easy to get yourself gas, as they say, you know, and lose touch with your realities of what is going on. So, you know, people always ask me, yo, why don't you get a Mercedes or a BMW? You know, you're self-employed. You can do this. I'm like, yeah, you're right. I can do it. Well, why would I?
I drive a Honda.
And I drive a Honda Hybrid because I'm trying to save on gas. I'm not trying to be spending my money. You know, that's what I'm saying. It's all the perception. You know, you're going to love me. I would hope that you love me the same if I'm driving a bucket, or if I was driving an expensive vehicle. It really shouldn't matter, because it is smoke and mirrors. People pay you more based on your perception. Your accountant pulls up in an expensive vehicle. You know already, at least you think, that he's going to be expensive, because look at his vehicle. So why not be humble, pull in some accounts, and make more money, and try to be average?
You know, I gotta give you a story. When I lived in Atlanta, I befriended a young lady, and I will not say her name. She was very nice. absolutely, she's a nice girl. She came to my house, I went to hers. At the time, I was driving a brand new, well, at the time, it was probably like 2 or 3 years old, Mazda Millennia. So I'm thinking, my car is all right. You know, a Millennia is all right. I'm chilling, heated seats in a sunroof. She had a I want to say brand new, but it was probably about a year or two old, white Jaguar.
Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous. She purchased breasts. Her breasts look absolutely fantastic. She was a good-looking girl with her white Jaguar. And we were going out to Justin's one night, which is Puffy's restaurant right on Peachtree Street. And so she was like, Sai, you know, meet me at my house, whatever, whatever. I'm like, all right, cool. And she's like, I'll drive. And I'm like, well, what if I want to go directly home? I was like, you know what? I'll just chill with you. Do you know, now mind you, I said where we're going, so obviously that kind of gives you the gist of it. Heads turned, everybody's watching us walk out of the car, valet, and I'm like, what the hell? Is this for real? And later on, you know, in time, I talked about that situation, and she said, you know what, Saida? That car is an investment. You don't know how much business I have gotten from that car. She had an $800 a month car, an insurance payment.
Yeah.
Like, okay, let's grasp our brain around this. Now, mind you, this was like 5 years ago, so the economy was extremely different. But I don't care how you look at it. $800? Now, I just want to say one more thing, too. She was, at the time, dating one of the members of the group Jagged Edge. So I'm sure that, like, and we all would go out together. We went to Waffle House and stuff like that. So this particular member of Jagged Edge, I'm sure, couldn't pull up in, like, a Mazda Millennia, I guess. I don't know. Maybe he could have. But so I'm sure the Jaguar had a lot of significance, and it's my gut that he was helping to pay for it. But the point is, are we at a point where we rely on an $800 a month tinfoil metal engine, steering wheel, and a horn to get us business deals? How about I do a good job? How about my reputation speaks for itself? How about, you know, drive like, are we at a point where success is so based on an eight, like, I just cannot afford that. Maybe I'm not supposed to admit that publicly, but y'all know I don't care. There's no way I can afford to spend $800 a month for a vehicle.
I wouldn't want to, even if that was the case.
Imagine.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. I mean, it really is truly ridiculous. I mean, because the only people who are making money at that point is the dealers. And you're the last one that's taking anything out for yourself.
Well, Tiff just put in the chat room, if you can afford it, though, then it's not that bad. But you know something, honestly, well, I'm not trying to assess her finances, but I don't think she could. I don't know, per se, but I'm just saying, like most normal people, let me give you a perfect example. How many of you, and I think many of you listened to the show when I had Carl Agard on the show, who's a friend of mine, and I think, True, you even mentioned one time, like, all my guests are always calling in from the street.
Yeah.
Carl said on the show, he's hustling his books out of his, he has a Beamer.
Yep.
I'm saying to myself, he's a great guy and has made tons of money in real estate. I thoroughly vet everybody before they come on my show. But he said out of his own mouth, he's hustling books out of the trunk of his car. So that should say something. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, that right there speaks for. Now, imagine you want to buy a house from him and he pulls up in a Honda Civic. What are you going to think?
Obviously that he can't sell you a house because he's not there yet.
Right. Tiff just put, but the ones that can afford luxury with ease, then they should have what they want. Yeah, but I know too many people making $45,000 with Birkin bags.
Mm-hmm.
I have one of my favorite pair of shoes is a pair of Coach loafers. I absolutely love my Coach loafers. These loafers were $215 or $248, $200 and something dollars. 40, whatever it was, over $200 for the loafers. Macy's had them on sale for $98. Mm-hmm. I just had to have them. I'm like, you know what, for $98, they're going to last me forever and a day. Well, they didn't have my size, and this thing happened, and that thing happened. I ended up driving to like two or three different Macy's all over the state of New Jersey because I wanted them for $98. That's a bargain. Well, the guy, one of the guys at one of the Macy's had given me a gift certificate for like $50 off or something because I had been wasting gas trying to get these shoes. And when I got to one Macy's, they had told me over the phone that it was the wrong size. So he was making a concession. So by the time I got these loafers, I paid $48 for these loafers.
Mm-hmm.
Care of them as if they were like the most, because they're so comfortable, and I'm so happy, and I'm telling you this now with a smile because I only paid $48 for these loafers, and I know they were 200 something, whatever they were, and I only paid $48. So for me, that's a bargain. I'm happy. I would have never paid that much for loafers, and maybe I would if I had it just to spend, but even deep down inside, I don't know. But I do know one thing, that when I did have a lot more money and I was living a lot more recklessly and not at the place where I am, I have spent hundreds of dollars on pocketbooks without even thinking twice. So, but that's still not an $800 car payment because that's recurring.
By the way, on that loafer, they still made money. Because trust me, they're not going to lose. I mean, they're buying that stuff in bulk. So you imagine the cost is not that expensive. It's just the design and the name that they're selling. So, again, that's your smoke and mirror. And that's why I'm saying a lot of people think that it's successful to have the brand name on the bag, but you're just literally paying for a brand name. If you look hard enough, you will get those same actual designer stuff for a real inexpensive price. You just got to know where to go and what to do. But again, that's just not my idea of success. You know, I've moved away from the brand name stuff because I feel like I can rock, you know, other stuff without having the label on it. Of course, I have a few pieces here and there, but I mean, that's just not my main focus anymore.
I think what I have done over the years, and this comes from, now this I can say comes from being a New Yorker. New Yorkers, I remember my cousin came from L.A. to stay with me in New York, and we were hanging out in a club years ago. Oh, I met this guy, and he didn't even have a car. And I said, well, that doesn't matter in New York. Because
right.
Don't forget, in New York City, I know a guy right now who I went to high school with who is an extremely famous DJ, and we were been friends since probably 1985 when we started high school. He's a millionaire, and he just got his license, driver's license, a couple years ago. And he bought a Navigator, a Lincoln Navigator, a couple years ago when he got his license, and he couldn't even drive it because he didn't like people in New York City. And again, I say New York City as in Manhattan, because people in Queens, Brooklyn, Bronx, they a lot of them will have a car and will buy a car. I'm talking proprietary to the city, the island of Manhattan. And I was trying to explain to her, you can't gauge a person on this coast if they drive or not. But again, that's in New York City, because where I live in Jersey, it, you know, you got to have a car. You know, I have a car. My husband has a car. But in New York City. So, you know, there are all these little things. But what I was saying about living in New York and, like, the status symbols and the clothes and things, New Yorkers always wear black. We always wear denim. We
uh-huh.
always wear black. Nobody wears, like, pinks and yellows and very few colors. Average New Yorkers don't. So just based on that and growing up in that environment, I was always taught, and just a lot of my friends, we'll either get a really expensive pair of shoes and maybe like a really expensive pocketbook and then have on like the most ripped up jeans and a t-shirt you could ever see in your life. Like, I think living in places like Cali, you know, Atlanta, Detroit, Virginia, there's a different standard of style and dress than there is in New York City, because everybody I know in New York City wears black all the time.
That is true.
Tiff says if someone shows up in a cab, we ask what happened.
For real?
So she put in that room. How Elegant says, please, I have a $6.95 bag right now. I'd be dogged if I had more money in the bag than I have in the bag. Oh, I got to tell you something. I got robbed when I was 16 years old. I mean, I'm making light of it now. It was a horrible experience. I was coming home late at night, and I lived in Jersey, and this guy followed me from the train. It was 2 o'clock in the morning, and I turned around as I was getting ready to walk up my steps because I felt like somebody was coming behind me, and I had a Gucci tote bag. I don't know if anybody remembers the Gucci tote bags that had, like, all the G's on them and had, like, a red and green strap. Well, he went to grab the bag, and I was holding on to the handle, so he was taking the knife. I mean, this happened in a split second. He was taking the knife and trying to cut the straps, so I'm screaming, and thank God my mother always used to wait up for me in the front of the house to make sure I made it home safely. So she's coming down screaming. He ended up slicing, like, my wrist open. That's why I'm saying it was very tragic at the time, but I can joke about it now because I'm commenting on what Hal Elegant said. My mother said to me, "Saida, what is wrong with you? You should have just let him take the bag. You're bleeding." And unfortunately, I was stabbed in my legs because I was on the ground kicking, trying to kick him away, and he, punctured my thighs. But the point is this. Do you know, in the middle of me being robbed, all I cared about was my Gucci bag? Like, how sick is that? Like, this is the stuff that people think. And, again, I was 16 at the time, and now, God forbid, if something like that happened to me, I'd let him take the damn bag. I wouldn't even care. But this is the stuff that goes on, that here I am willing to risk my life for a designer handbag, and this guy is with a knife at 2 o'clock in the morning, like, probably trying to maim me just so he can get my wallet. So I think, and I can joke about it now, but I did not go out of the house for many, many months after that. But the point is, just not get to the point where you're at a place where you're so wrapped up in being defined by stuff than really understanding what's truly, truly, truly important. So God forbid it ever happen again. He could take my Gucci bag, my Coach bag, my Coach shoes. I just want to live another day to yell and scream at my kids. I'm reading some of this stuff that's in the chat room. Tiff said they may want to send you one for free. This was a very, very long time ago. Heck, I love my car, but take it. Yeah, I mean, it's the high road said that's a New York sister for real. Yeah, and that's basically what it was. Like, how dare you come and try to get me? I'm not getting got. You're not getting it. So, a lot of it just has to do with the New York attitude. But I started off the top of today's show, True, and I just want to say thank you for calling in. I wasn't even expecting that. So this has been amazing to actually talk to you. But the point is, I started off the show talking about Maliki and how I had to draw the circle to make me kind of get a better, to better gauge what success means for me, because if not, I'll get caught up in the materialistic depression that so many other people are in right now and not take the time to quote-unquote smell the roses and really appreciate every single day and what it can bring. True, you're talking to me on the phone. Oh, you just did it. I was going to say, you're talking to me on the phone and you didn't send me my 5-minute warning, and then I looked in the chat room. Everybody, True is my unofficial timer. Listen, tell everybody a little bit about what you do, because you listen to the show every day. You have your own show, so tell everybody who you are, what you do, and then we'll get ready to wrap up today's show.
Cool, dude. I'll make it done in 1 minute so I keep you on track. My show...
You are too funny. You got to come to see me when you come to New York.
I told my brother that, too. I told him that the other day. He's in Jersey, too, in the New York area, I believe. And I said, you know what? Whenever I come to New York, there's one person I got to see. I got to see Saida. Never met her, but I got to meet her.
I can't tell everybody where I live on the air, but...
No.
That come to the show every day. Of course, if you ever come to the New York City area, I will definitely make sure we connect, we hang out, we go out and have a good time. But anyway, tell everybody what you're up to when your show comes on, and we can keep it moving.
Okay, my show comes on Thursdays at 5 o'clock, and I talk about everything under the sun about relationships. Whether it's family, husband and wife. Everything that's under the sun of relationship. I'm currently writing a book. It's called Are You the Right One for Me? Actually, the book is done. I just had to wrap up some rough edges. It's a self-help application. And I'm writing another book that's fiction. It's called No Weapon Formed Against Me. It has some trippy things inside there. And in my my daytime after talking to Cy, I do work, as most people probably don't think I do. I'm an entrepreneur. I sell medical supplies. That's what I do. Oh, and I speak too as well. So 50 million things, but that's what I do in a nutshell.
No, it's all good. I'm happy to have you every single day. And everybody, I miss dropping Seed Radio. He's not here, so we will have to find out if he's okay because he always joins us. I see I'm down to 3 minutes. Oh, can I tell everybody, though? Starting in November, we're going to have some commercials. I'll definitely have to pay much closer attention to time because I'm going to have commercials, so... That's a good thing. See, I just dropped you guys a big nugget of information before November 1st. So I will not be able to skirt around the time issue and just can't babble on and change the length of show at will. I do have to be a little more diligent about time come November. So anyway, thank you everybody for listening. And just remember that the light of God surrounds us, the love of God enfolds. Of God protects us. The presence of God watches over us. Wherever I am, God is, and wherever you are, God is. Thanks, God, and so it is. Tip says, oh, no commercials. Tip, I got to pay the bills, and I'm only going to do 2 15-second commercials during the show, so that's what's up with that. So I'm going to end the show now, but I'm going to keep the chat room open for about 5 more minutes. Love you all, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. Don't forget, tomorrow we're talking about aging. Bye.